Welcome to the deep dive. Ever really stop and think about the sheer power packed into your legs? Something you use constantly, right?
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it.
It's incredible, really.
Yeah. I mean, from walking to jumping, even just standing there, there's this whole, like, complex network of muscles doing its thing.
Constantly working.
Exactly. So today, we're doing a deep dive into that world, the lower extremity. We're talking hip, thigh, leg, knee, ankle muscles. We've basically distilled a big muscles manual down to the essentials. Think of it as a shortcut to understanding the anatomy that, well, drives pretty much all your movement.
That's the goal, yeah. Unpack it, find the key insights for you.
And you might be thinking, why do I need to know muscle names? Well, it's more than just trivia. Understanding this stuff is actually crucial.
It really is.
It helps you appreciate what your body can do, optimize how you move, maybe even prevent some of those annoying injuries, and just, you know, boost your overall performance.
Whether you're an athlete or just like getting through the day.
Totally. It impacts your posture, stability, mobility, everything. I'm actually really excited to get into this.
And that's really the heart of it, isn't it? When you grasp how and why these muscles work, not just what they are, it gives you a whole new level of awareness.
A new level of control, maybe.
Exactly. Control and insight. It empowers you to move better, feel better, just take better care of yourself.
Okay, so let's dive in. Let's lay the groundwork. This powerhouse, the lower extremity, our sources really hammer home the immense power and stability in your hips and legs. They're not just legs. They propel you, absorb shock. What are they called? Ground reaction forces.
Ground reaction forces, yeah. Every single step, every jump, your legs are dealing with those forces, transmitting them up the chain.
And what's often missed, I think, is how that lower body stability makes upper body mobility possible.
Oh, absolutely fundamental. That solid base from your legs and pelvis, that's what lets your arms, your hands, your torso do all those complex, agile movements.
Without it, you'd be pretty limited.
You really would. You need that stable platform.
Good point. Okay, so let's get our terms straight. Anatomically speaking, when we say hip, we mean the actual joint, right? The ball and socket.
Precisely. Where the femur, your thigh bone, meets the pelvis.
And the thigh is that whole region between the hip joint and the knee. The femur's in there.
Correct.
And the leg. That's technically below the knee, what we usually call the calf and shin.
That's the anatomical definition, yes. Hip, thigh, leg. Good to keep clear.
So that hip joint, it's a marvel, you said.
Yeah.
Ball and socket like the shoulder.
Mm-hmm. But with a key difference, its range of motion is a bit less than the shoulders.
Why is that?
It's a trade-off. The hip socket is much deeper. That gives it incredible structural strength that has to be strong, right? It carries your body weight, handles massive forces.
Makes sense. Built for stability over extreme mobility.
Exactly, though standard ranges are just that standard.
Right, because you see athletes like dancers or gymnasts, their hip mobility is way beyond average.
Oh, absolutely. And even think about, say, a baseball catcher. That deep squat position requires significant specific hip flexibility developed over time. Your body really does adapt.
It really does. Okay, let's zoom into the hip muscles now, starting with some rotators, the ones that turn the leg out.
Yep, the deep lateral rotators. There are six nestled deep in there. But let's focus on the biggest one, the piriformis.
Piriformis, I've heard of that one, runs from the sacrum, the base of the spine, across to the outer thigh bone.
That's it. Primarily rotates the hip, laterally turns the leg out.
But there's a twist, isn't there? Something about when the hip is bent.
Ah, yes. Here's where it gets really interesting and really relevant for you. Normally, it rotates outward. But once you flex your hip past about 90 degrees, its line of pull changes. It actually starts to rotate the hip inward, medially rotates.
Oh, okay. So it reverses its action.
It does. And knowing that is key for understanding certain stretches, like the pigeon pose in yoga. You're often targeting the piriformis in that flexed, internally rotating range to really get a good stretch. It's also a key stabilizer for the back of the hip joint.
Fascinating. And just quickly, the sciatic nerve, it runs near this muscle, right?
Typically runs under it, yes. Our sources mention variations exist, but that close proximity is why piriformis tightness can sometimes be linked to sciatic-like pain. Important connection.
Good to know. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about muscles lifting the leg forward, hip flexors, and also bringing the leg in adductors.
Right. A really important group here is the iliopsoas. It's actually two muscles working together, the psoas major and the iliacus.
Deep core muscles, you could say.
Very much so. They start up on your lower spine, the lumbar vertebrae, and the inside of your hip bone, then run down to the inner part of your upper thigh bone.
So they flex the hip, lift the leg.
Yes, and they're crucial for posture, for lumbar spine stability. The psoas major also helps pull the lumbar spine into a slight extension and stabilizes the front of the hip joint.
And wasn't there a fun fact about a psoas minor?
Ah, yes. The psoas minor. It's only present in about 60% of people. Apparently much more functional back when we were quadrupeds, walking on all fours. So mostly when we say psoas, we mean the psoas major.
Got it. And the adductor group, inner thigh.
Exactly. Bringing the leg towards the midline, you've got the pectineus, adductor brevis, longus, and magnus. They mainly adduct, but also help with flexing and medially rotating the hip.
And the pectineus. That's one often involved in groin strains.
Yes, the pectineus, being most superficial and high up, along with the gracilis, we'll get to that one, are common culprits in what people call a groin strain.
Right. And within that group, the adductor magnus is special.
Very much so. It's the biggest and deepest adductor. What's fascinating is that its back fibers, the posterior part, can actually help extend the hip.
Extend. Like the opposite of flexing.
Precisely. Which is why it sometimes gets called the fourth hamstring, shows its versatility.
Wow. Okay. Now for the real powerhouses of hip extension and moving the leg out, the glutes.
Ah, the mighty glutes. Gluteus maximus, medius, and minimus.
Gluteus maximus, that's the big one, right? Gives shape to the backside.
The largest and most powerful, yes. Huge for hip extension. Think climbing stairs, standing up from a squat.
Yeah.
Also helps abduct the leg, move it out, and rotate it laterally. Its lower fibers can even help adduct.
Where does it attach?
Starts on the sacrum and the back of the ilium, your hip bone, and runs down to the femur and also into that thick band on the outside of your leg, the IT band. And importantly, it connects into the fascia of your lower back, linking it to core stability.
Okay. And underneath that?
You find the gluteus medius. Absolutely crucial for pelvic stability. Its main job is hip abduction, lifting the leg sideways.
Why is that so important?
Think about walking. Every time you lift one foot, the glute medius on the standing leg works hard to keep your pelvis level. Without it, your hip would drop dramatically with each step. Essential for smooth gait.
Makes sense. And deepest of all.
The gluteus minimus lies right under the medius, works closely with it for hip abduction, and also helps with medial rotation, turning the hip inward, and some flexion. So all three work together for power and that crucial stability.
Got it. Okay, let's shift focus slightly to muscles that are multitaskers, crossing two joints, hip and knee.
Yes, the two joint muscles. Really efficient design.
How so?
Well, by crossing two joints, they can create or control movement at both simultaneously. It allows for more coordinated, powerful actions. Think of them as linking segments together.
Right. So which hip flexors also act on the knee?
A key one is the rectus femoris. Now, this is part of your quadriceps group, the big thigh muscle.
Ew, yeah.
But it's the only one of the four quad muscles that actually crosses the hip joint. So it helps flex your hip and extend your knee. Dual action.
Okay. Rectus femoris. What else?
Then you have the sartorius. This one's pretty cool.
Why is that?
It's the longest muscle in the entire human body. Runs in a diagonal line across your thigh, from the outside of your hip down to the inside of your knee.
Longest muscle. Wow. What does it do?
It's unique. It flexes the hip, rotates the hip outward, and abducts it, moves it away from the body. Plus, it flexes the knee.
Thank you guys a lot.
It does. And the name sartorius comes from the Latin word for tailor. Think of that classic cross-legged sitting position tailors used to use.
Ah, like sitting on the floor with one ankle on the opposite knee.
Exactly. That position puts the sartorius through pretty much all its actions at once. Flexion, abduction, lateral rotation of the hip, and knee flexion. It's a perfect illustration.
Clever. Okay, who else crosses both?
There's the tensor fasciae latae, or TFL. Small muscle on the outside of your hip.
TFL, right. Hip flexor.
Yep, and one that can get overused sometimes. Its muscle fibers blend into that long, tough band running down the outside of your thigh.
The IT band. Iliotibial band.
That's the one. And that band crosses the knee, so the TFL influences things down there too, indirectly.
Gotcha. And need to clarify the gracilis.
Yes, good point. Gracilis is on the inner thigh. It does cross both joints. It adducts the hip, helps rotate it medially and flexes the knee.
But it doesn't flex the hip.
Correct. Despite sometimes being grouped contextually with hip flexors because of its location, it doesn't actually perform hip flexion. And remember, along with pectineus, it's often implicated in groin strains.
Okay, clear. Now, flipping to the back, the two joint hip extensors, we're talking hamstrings here.
The hamstrings, yes. A group of three muscles, semitendinosus, semimembranosus, and biceps femoris.
And their main jobs.
Primarily hip extension, pushing your leg back, and knee flexion, bending your knee. They also help tilt your pelvis backward, powerhouse grip for running, jumping.
Any distinctions between the three?
Well, the biceps femoris is the one on the lateral side, the outside of your thigh. And it's unique because it's the only hamstring that attaches to the fibula, that smaller outer bone in your lower leg. Ah, okay. The other two attach to the tibia.
Exactly. The semitendinosus and semimembranosus attach to the tibia, the main shin bone. The biceps femoris also helps rotate the hip laterally. The other two weakly rotate it medially.
And there was something interesting about where one of them attaches a goose's foot.
Ah, the pes inserinus. Yes, fascinating bit of anatomy. It means goose's foot in Latin.
Why?
Because the tendons of three different muscles converge onto one spot on the inside edge of the tibia, just below the knee, and the shape kind of resembles a goose's foot.
Which three muscles?
The sartorius, the gracilis, and the semitendinosus, all meeting right there. It's a neat example of shared attachment for stability.
Cool. Okay, let's keep moving down. Knee and ankle. Stability and propulsion.
Mm-hmm. The knee first, mostly about flexion and extension.
Primarily. Bending, flexion goes up to maybe 150 degrees. Straightening, extension is 0 degrees. Though a little hyperextension, maybe 10 degrees, is often normal.
And important note, we can't actively rotate the lower leg at the knee joint itself. That rotation comes from the hip.
Right. So for straightening the knee extension, that's the quadriceps group.
The quads, yeah. We mentioned rectus femoris crosses the hip. The other three, vastus lateralis, outer thigh, vastus medialis, inner thigh, and vastus intermedius, deep in the middle, only cross the knee.
And they all come together where?
They merge into the common quadriceps tendon, which surrounds the kneecap, the patella, and then continues down as the patellar ligament to attach to the top of the tibia, the tibial tuberosity. That's how they pull the lower leg straight.
I've heard people talk about the VMO. What's that?
Ah, the VMO, vastus medialis obliquus. Those are the sort of teardrop-shaped angled fibers of the vastus medialis right near the knee. There's debate about whether targeting the VMO specifically is crucial for knee health.
So the jury's still out.
Somewhat. But what is clear, and what our sources emphasize, is that you need full knee extension, fully straightening the leg, to effectively strengthen all the vastus muscles, including the VMO. That end range activation is key.
Okay, good takeaway. Now, for bending the knee flexion.
Well, the hamstrings are major players, obviously.
Right. But there's also the popliteus. Small muscle, deep behind the knee. Its cool job is unlocking the knee from full extension. It initiates the bend. Also a stabilizer.
Unlocking the knee, interesting.
Then there's the main calf muscle, the gastrocnemius, another two-joint muscle.
It crosses the knee and the ankle.
Yep. So it helps flex the knee, and it points the foot downward, plantar flexion. Absolutely vital for walking, running, even just standing posture.
And that other little one, the plantaris, freshman's nerve.
Yes, the plantaris. Tiny muscle, not everyone even has one. Weak knee flexor, weak plantar flexor. But its tendon is incredibly long and thin.
So students mistake it for a nerve.
Exactly. Hence the nickname, a classic anatomy lab story.
Okay, down to the ankle. Lots of movement here too. Pointing down.
Plantar flexion. Standard range maybe 60 degrees.
Lifting up.
Dorsiflexion. Around 30 degrees standard. Cool. Though dancers often have much more, especially plantar flexion, for going on points.
And turning the foot out and in. Eversion or pronation turns the sole outward. Inversion or supination turns the sole inward. Different terms, same movements.
Got it. So the big push-off muscles, plantar flexors.
The two main powerhouses are the gastrocnemius again and the soleus, which lies underneath it. Both are very strong, and unfortunately, both are prone to cramping sometimes.
And they share a tendon.
They do. They merge into the calcaneal tendon, the famous Achilles tendon, which attaches right onto your heel bone, the calcaneus. And the gastrocnemius also connects into the plantar fascia on the sole of your foot.
What about supporting the arch of the foot?
Ah, crucial role. Muscles like tibialis posterior, flexor digitorum longus, flexes the toes, and flexor hallucis longus, flexes the big toe, run down the back of the leg and then under the foot. They're key for holding up that arch. They also help plantar flex and invert the foot.
Okay. And lifting the foot up, dorsiflexion.
The strongest dorsiflexor is the tibialis anterior, runs right down the front of your shin.
And here's where you might feel it, right? After lots of walking.
Exactly. Especially walking uphill. You're constantly dorsiflexing more, so that tibialis anterior gets a real workout and can feel sore. It also helps invert the foot, turn it inward.
That makes sense. Turning the foot outward aversion.
That's the job of the fibularis group, sometimes called the peroneals. They run down the outside of your lower leg. Fibularis longus, brevis, and tertius.
And they're the ones often injured in ankle sprains.
Very commonly, yes. Especially a lateral ankle sprain, where the foot rolls inward, aggressively stretching or tearing these outer muscles and ligaments.
Ouch.
Okay.
And summarizing inversion, turning the foot inward.
Main players are tibialis anterior and tibialis posterior. Then you get help from the flexor digitorum longus, flexor hallucis longus, and even the extensor hallucis longus, which extends the big toe.
Wow. So putting it all together, every single step involves this incredibly complex coordination.
It really does. Stability, propulsion, shock absorption. It's a constant dynamic interplay between all these muscles. Truly amazing when you break it down.
Definitely. Let's zoom out again for a moment. Broader concepts, muscle shapes.
Right. Our sources mention five basic shapes: circular, convergent, parallel, fusiform, and pinnate. The shape tells you a lot about the muscle's job.
Like how? Give us an example.
Okay, convergent muscles, like your gluteus maximus or pec major in the chest. They have a broad origin but narrow down to a single tendon. Good for generating a lot of force in one direction.
Makes sense. Parallel.
Parallel muscles, like the sartorius or hamstrings. Fibers run parallel to the long axis. Great for producing large movements covering a long range.
And pinnate. Sounds like a feather.
Exactly. Pinnate muscles have fibers running at an angle into a central tendon, like barbs on a feather. The rectus femoris is an example. This allows more muscle fibers to pack into a smaller space, making them very strong. Circular muscles surround openings. Fusiform are spindle-shaped like the biceps. Shape dictates function.
Cool. Now, how muscles get bigger? When you exercise, do you get more muscle fibers, or do the existing ones just get bigger?
Ah, good question. The primary way muscles enlarge from exercise is B. The size of individual muscle fibers increases.
So not more fibers, just bigger ones?
Mostly, yes. That increase in cell size is called hypertrophy. An increase in cell number would be hyperplasia, which is much less common in human skeletal muscle growth from exercise. So you're basically bulking up the fibers you already have.
Hypertrophy. Got it. And a couple more terms to know. Hypermobility.
That's having a range of motion greater than norma. Think double jointed, although that's not quite accurate anatomically. Just very flexible, loose joints.
And the opposite, hypomobility.
Less range of motion than normal. You might see this in people with very sedentary jobs, for instance. Joints get stiff.
And finally, atrophy.
That's a decrease in size, a wasting away of tissue. Can happen from disuse, like if a limb is in a cast or as part of the natural aging process.
Okay, that covers a lot of ground. What an incredible journey, really, through the lower extremity.
It really is amazing when you start to unpack it all. The hip, the knee, the ankle, how they all connect and work together.
Yeah, the power, the precision, it's all there, facilitating everything you do every day.
Hopefully this deep dive gives you a totally new appreciation for this part of your body. It's easy to take it for granted, isn't it?
Absolutely. But knowing even a bit more about how it works is pretty empowering.
And that leads to a final thought, maybe something for you to ponder.
Okay.
Next time you're just walking or standing up or maybe even crossing your legs, try to tune in. Think about that complex symphony of muscles firing, stabilizing, moving you.
Become aware of it.
Exactly. How might understanding this intricate design change how you think about movement or exercise?
Yeah.
Or even just stretching?
Good question. Knowing the parts might change how you use the whole machine.
Precisely. It's about connecting with your own body on a deeper level. How does this knowledge empower you?
Food for thought. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. It's been fascinating.
Always a pleasure.
We hope to explore more insights with you again soon.